Well, what we've already seen from both the administration and the Pentagon is they're not going to provide a budget at sequester levels. They're going to come in at the levels mandated by the Budget Control Act, the debt deal signed last August. So some of that question has already been answered. Now, we can have a conversation about whether it's a good idea to come in those levels or to anticipate the effect of sequester.
Okay, so what should DOD be doing now to prepare for the possibility of sequester?
Well, to be honest, I believe they're doing the right thing. Sequester is a very unlikely occurrence. Sequester was a very effective tool throughout the 1990s when we did successfully reduce our deficits and did successfully bring our budget into surplus. But it's a successful tool when it's enforcing an already existing consensus. It's a lousy tool when you're trying to create a consensus. The stick of sequester doesn't make people agree any more than they were agreeing without that threat. For instance, there's been five times sequester has been triggered in the time that it's existed. Once, in 1986, right after it was first implemented, sequester was triggered and a portion of funds was taken away. But every other time since then, it's been waived off by Congress or significantly modified. The one exception to that is in 1991, there was a sequester of funds. It was a sequester of $1.4 million across the entire domestic spending. That was less than 0.2%. So technically, sequesters happened twice, but the second time was mainly because Congress couldn't bring themselves to worry about 0.2%.
So it sounds like it's something like a paddle that the teacher keeps in the corner, but every year the substitute comes in and leaves it lying in the corner.
I think that's right, or even better, the paddle may have been scary in 1920, but in 2010, most kids probably know they're not going to get the paddle in their classroom. Which doesn't mean we're not going to have a lot of talk about this sequester in the next year. But the answer is nobody, the Pentagon, either party in Congress, either House in Congress, really wants the sequester to take effect. It's a very bad budgeting mechanism. It's intentionally designed to be bad. You have a 10% drop in spending in 1 year. And let's not forget that happens to the domestic side as well. It's not just defense. Unfortunately, it's going to be a while till we get the deal that takes away sequester. As we've already seen, the two parties and the two houses don't agree on what should be the various contributions to reducing the deficit. How much should come from revenue? How much should come from entitlement savings? How much should come from discretionary spending? And until we get that agreement, sequester is going to stay out there as a threat.
So when you put it that way, to me, it just seems like a really it adds inefficiency to the process because we have the specter of something that everybody kind of knows is not going to happen. Am I wrong in that? I mean, is there something that's happening that is making this more a more productive process of budgeting between the agencies, between the Pentagon and Congress, with the specter of sequester hanging over it?
It's a great question. Actually, I think this is about the most productive way to do it. We've had the administration, we've had the Pentagon say, hey, look, we know that's going to happen, but we're not going to start jumping through hoops to try to respond to that. And let's not forget, they're already facing a very real challenge. The defense budget is going to go down in FY13 in both real and for the first time in nominal terms. The top line will be lower than it was last year. That's already a lot of work. Spinning up all the 20,000 employees in the Pentagon and the hundreds of thousands of people supporting them is wasting a lot of manpower. It's wasting a lot of time on something that's probably not likely to happen. So the administration, the Pentagon, have done a great job moving forward on a more realistic scenario, while at the same time Congress does have to debate these bigger issues and does know there is something at stake if they really can't come to terms with some kind of deal.
We're speaking with Russell Rumbaugh. He's co-director of budgeting for foreign affairs and defense at the Stimson Center. So let's talk about the reality that we do have, which is what the 2013 budget will look like. We know the top line, and from what the Secretary Panetta has said, some of the cuts will come from troop reductions. He's going to pull two brigades from Europe and so forth. What are you predicting we'll see when the budget comes out, probably next month?
Well, I don't think we're going to see a lot of change yet. We're starting to get the bite. The defense budget has actually been flat in nominal terms since FY10. This is the third year FY10, FY11, and FY12 that has had roughly the same top line. The economy hasn't been doing so hot, so inflation hasn't been a lot, but it has been something. So the buying power of that top line is eroding. This year, we're going to have the top line erode, not just the inflation erode the buying power, but actually a lower number. Nevertheless, it's small changes. We're talking about 1%, 2% a year. This isn't major wholesale changes. It's still over $500 billion a year. That's a lot of money. So we're not yet seeing the bite, even though I'm sure, especially on your show, there are people who are scrambling to deal with these new realities. We're not likely to see major structural change yet, with the exception that you pointed out of ground forces and strength. It was the most notable part of the strategic review of the strategic rationale for why we can reduce ground forces. We are not going to size the stability operations, and we're going to focus on Asia-Pacific, which is a very air and naval power-centric region. So a strategic rationale to reduce ground forces, that's much bolder than saying, hey, we had a temporary increase, I'm going to take it away, or hey, let's try to find some administrative savings and shut down a couple back offices, but rather say we really can get by a smaller ground force.
But by the same token, do you think that we'll have a bigger naval force to deal with Asia? I asked one analyst who said there's no way, for example, that they would ever add a carrier group, for example. So how will we project that power, given how will DOD project that power, given the fact that what you say the buying power for systems is so much lower as years go by?
Sure. Except what we have to keep in mind is how powerful the U.S. already is. We have 11 carriers. There's a possibility we'll go down to 10 carriers. But that's so much more than anybody else in the world. France has two. Britain just got rid of their only fixed-wing aircraft carrier and operates only a single helicopter aircraft carrier. So, sure, the U.S. may have less, but it's not less in any way that's going to affect geopolitics or any way that's going to affect the U.S.'s standing in the world.
The Joint Chiefs Chairman has come out lately on the defensive in terms of being able to fight war on two fronts. What's your opinion on that? What do you think the real status is?
Well, General Dempsey has done a great job recently saying, what did the two-war standard mean? It's been around for 20 years. What two wars do you mean? It's a planning construct. It's not actually supposed to be a strategy. Again, we're spending a lot of money, and we have a very robust and very good military. It's certainly capable of handling most of the threats or likely crises out there in the world.